Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
There are several reasons I'm going to talk about prosperity today. One of them is I haven't spoken about it in a while, and I love to talk about prosperity. Another one is because my teacher, Kennedy Schultz, said that if you want people to really get interested in spirituality, talk about money or sex. That's another reason. And the third reason is because October, this month, is our Abundance Plus program, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Now, as many of you know, because you've been coming to this teaching, taking classes for a while, some of you may not, prosperity is one of the four main areas that Dr. Holmes tells us where we need to focus our energy in order to get our life into balance and to keep it balanced when we get challenged, all right? So keep it balanced when we get there. And these four areas, for anyone who's new, are health, wealth, relationships, and work, or what he also calls creative expression. And even though these four areas are very different areas of our life, they all have some things in common. For one thing, they all have both physical components, but also mental, emotional, and spiritual components, all four of them. Secondly, we cannot avoid any of them. We may try, but we can't. And third, they are all part of our normal human experience, which means they're all part of what we are here in this sphere of aliveness, whatever we are. It's part of what we're all here to learn. So we might as well learn how to deal with them, not only at the physical level, but also at the mental and spiritual level, which is actually a whole lot more important. Now, even though we know that none of these four areas is any more important than the other three, each one of them can appear to be more important during certain times in our lives. And this time usually happens when one particular area becomes all that we can think about. It comes when either something is missing in our life or when some part of our life is in chaos. That's when we end up thinking about one or the other of these things. For example, our health goes bad, our money runs out, our spouse or our partner walks out, or we can't find a spouse or a partner and we want one. Our job disappears or changes in a way where we don't want to do it anymore. These are the kind of things that grab our attention in a big way. And the funny thing is, the other three areas of our life can be going along just fine, but if area number four is a disaster, then our life feels completely out of balance. Kind of funny how that works. Now, sometimes you try to deal with it in different ways. Some people try to ignore the problem area, whether it's relationship or money or whatever, and focus even harder on the other three areas, which actually doesn't work for very long. And the reason that doesn't work for very long is it's sort of like having a wheel out of balance on your car. The problem is just one little spot on the rim or maybe on the tire, but when it starts to go out at 70, 80, 90 miles an hour, whatever you're doing on Georgia 400, the whole car starts to wobble, right? You can feel it through the steering wheel all the way up from the ground. Now, one more thing I want to talk about for a moment before I move forward into the heart of the talk is this. It is the widely held belief of most of the world, the news we hear, the internet stuff, whatever, what Dr. Holmes calls race consciousness, the beliefs of the race, that all of these areas are substantially affected by what happens around us, by what's going on out there. In other words, according to the world, how we think about money or how we build or destroy our relationships or how our health shows up or not, whatever, all of these things depend upon externals. They depend upon how we were treated or what our family talked about. They depend upon what we learned in school growing up. They depend upon whatever church or religion we happen to grow up in. But the interesting thing about our beliefs, particularly those related to prosperity, let's get a little more specific, is the conflicting external messages that we get all along the days of our life, every different stage of our life. For example, talk in terms of money as an example here. We see our parents growing up. We start to become aware that our parents are working to make ends meet, to buy the things they want to buy, to make our family more comfortable. They save money for college or for vacations or for Christmas and all of these things. And all of this is good stuff. It allows us, if we had a family that was even moderately prosperous, to enjoy the things around us. But then on Sunday morning, we go to Sunday school or catechism class, where I went in Catholic school. And there we are told that God likes poor people more than rich people. Anybody hear that when you were growing up? I certainly did. Okay. And then the same person who teaches us that money is a bad thing asks us to give more money to God in the collection plate. All right. It gets very, very confusing when it comes especially to religion. That's why Bill was talking about this, too. When I first got into this teaching, one of the things that attracted me is that they said it's perfectly okay to be prosperous. That was big news back at the time. In fact, it not only says it's okay to be prosperous, it tells us that we are supposed to be. We're supposed to be, every single one of us. This teaching, when I first heard it, told me, it's in the book, it's in all sorts of different books, that it is not a sin to be able to buy the things we like and to be able to do the things that we want to do in the way we want to do them anytime that we want to do them. And this is great, being raised Catholic, we never have to feel guilty about it. We never have to feel guilty about it. And that made a lot more sense to me, because we should no more feel guilty about having money than we should feel guilty about being free or being healthy or doing work that we love. So that's part of the message today. No guilt. All right. Anyway, let's get into that. With that being said, I've discovered something very interesting in the years I've been teaching. I discovered, first of all, that teaching people to feel good about themselves when they do have money is not much of a problem anymore. It really, really isn't. Most people who show up here in a place like this nowadays have read all sorts of books. How many of you have been to a prosperity seminar? How many of you have read a prosperity book or two? Three? Four? Five? Okay, good. All right. And most of you and a lot of other people have gotten over the guilt thing, at least as it relates to money. The other stuff, I'm not so sure. But a new and more interesting problem, and it's much more subtle, that I noticed a few years ago, is the fact that many people who are okay with being prosperous don't feel good about themselves when they don't have money. You hear what I'm saying? Very, very different. They don't feel good about themselves when they don't have money. In other words, when they've got it, they feel rich, but when they haven't got it, they feel poor. And that spiritually presents a problem. You see, judging our personal value based on the money and the things that we have accumulated, or the kind of car we drive, or the kind of house we have, may seem completely logical in terms of the way that the world thinks. But once we finally understand what real prosperity truly is, all right, and how it's created and how it's maintained, then we can begin to see how destructive this kind of thinking really is to our future prosperity and our spiritual well-being. You see, sometimes we may be very clear on an intellectual level that money is not the source of happiness in our life. Everybody clear about that? Okay. I like what Coco Chanel said. She said, "The most important things in life are free, but the second most important things are very, very expensive." It was a really good statement, okay? But what we sometimes forget, you know, we know money is not the source of our happiness, but the lack of money is not the source of our unhappiness either. That's the flip side. And I say that because when we believe that it is our lack of money that's creating a problem, we're giving money more credit than it deserves. That's why the title today is, "It's Only Money." Now, the short answer here is what we always have to keep in the very center of our mind, of our consciousness, is that money is always an external effect. Nothing more and nothing less. I'll talk about that a little more later. In other words, the absence of money does not create problems. It is a reflection of a problem. You get it? It doesn't create problems. It's a reflection of a money. And the presence of money is just one possible result produced by a consciousness that sees itself in constant and complete harmony with the source of all abundance in the universe. So, that which brings us the things in life that we desire is never the money. We may use money to buy it, but the money isn't bringing it. What is bringing these things to us is a consciousness of prosperity that attracts and produces the things we want. It is the spiritual understanding that when we establish ourselves in a consciousness of abundance and gratitude, Bill talked about that, and creativity and passion for life, the whole universe begins to flow into our life in amazing ways, in ways we may not even have expected. And, this is important, we have to know that we are always able to establish that kind of mentality, that awareness of emotional and spiritual strength and confidence. We need to be able to develop that abundant mentality even when we have no money in our pocket and nothing showing up in our bank account. As a matter of fact, that's when we especially need to be able to establish that kind of a consciousness, because that's the only thing that's going to allow us to create in the material world the things that we desire in here, from in here. Now, I realize that most people, if asked, would choose to have money rather than not have it. Anybody else here? How many people would rather have money than not? Most of us, okay. Some of you think it's a trick question, but that's okay. But just to be clear here, I'm talking about people who have moved beyond the stage where they believe that money is the root of all evil, or that a rich person will not be allowed into heaven. Because that kind of mentality, though it may be around in some places, has pretty much diminished in the New Thought community. In fact, most of us here, whether you've gone to classes or not, are aware that the actual quote from the Bible, from St. Paul in his letter to Timothy, somebody always asks that, the actual quote was, "The love of money is the root of all evil." The love of money is the root of all evil. But even that quote is frequently misunderstood, because the truth is there's nothing wrong with loving money. I love money. Okay, I keep my money clip here. I got them all in a special order. I got them all facing in the same direction. I love playing with it. Kennedy used to tell me that he would iron his money if he could. That's how much he loved it. Okay? There's nothing wrong with loving the experience of abundance as long as we express that love in a healthy and intelligent way. That's what's important. If we don't, we get into greed and all those other things. I like to think about it this way. Deepak Chopra, really a very, very good writer, he defines money this way. He said money is, it's a good definition, he says, money is the symbol of God's substance and the idea of spiritual supply objectified, made into objects. And I like that. And my teacher, Dr. Barker, Raymond Charles Barker, he defined money in three words. He said, money is God in action. God in action. All right, and I like that one too. So what I decided to do was take those two definitions and blend them together and see what we got. So if money is both God in action and a symbol of God's substance, and if God is love, which is a given as far as I'm concerned, then money must be a symbol that we can use to move love from place to place. Doesn't that make sense? Certainly did to me. So that love may be expressed as a gift. It could be a charitable gift to a certain organization or to support some natural disaster. It could be given as food or medicine. We can send in money and do that. It could be champagne or flowers for somebody we like. It could be a house or a car or a trip to Cancun. All right? We can transfer all of those things by giving money. And in the process, we can share love and share our good in a whole bunch of different ways with a whole bunch of different people in a whole bunch of different places. That's the power of money. That's why I prefer George Bernard Shaw's quote. He's got a great quote. He said, "The lack of money is the root of all evil." The lack of money is the root of all evil. All right? Quite a few years ago, a man by the name of Charles Fillmore, some of you have heard that name, I know I've quoted him, Dr. Fillmore started the Unity Movement. I know a lot of you came out of Unity. That's where I first started in metaphysics. He and his wife founded the Unity Movement. And he was doing a prosperity talk, just like this, to 1,200 people in New York, whatever. And he made the statement within his sermon, "It is a sin to be poor." It is a sin to be poor. And when he said that, a lot of people were absolutely shocked. It is a sin to be poor. They were shocked. When he said that, many of them asked how such a great spiritual teacher, a man who had so much compassion, could blame poor people for their poverty. Now, obviously the people who were upset didn't understand the metaphysical principle behind what he was saying. His point was, is that poverty is simply the logical result of the ignorance or misuse of the laws of abundance, that's one, and that no one was trapped in poverty unless they allowed themselves to remain in a consciousness that accepted poverty as necessary, unavoidable, or insurmountable. If they stayed in that consciousness. In other words, unless they stayed in a victim mentality. A victim mentality. Now, that's all he was saying. I mean, he wasn't blaming anybody. He wasn't criticizing anybody. He was simply making a very honest and astute observation that the only real sin we ever commit in any part of our life, whether it's health, wealth, work, or relationships, is the failure to live up to our own divine potential. That's the only sin we commit. He was saying that we can change our situation, whatever it is, anytime we want, simply by changing our consciousness. And there are a lot of people that didn't want to hear that part. Now, another important principle of prosperity is that money is not a thing. Money is energy. I'm sure a lot of you have heard that before in your various workshops and stuff. Joseph Campbell had an interesting quote. He said, money is congealed energy, and releasing it releases life's possibilities. I like the visual effect of that statement. So even when we don't have cash and coins in our pocket or blips on the screen in our checking account, we do always have access to a virtually unlimited supply of energy. And how does that energy show up? That thing we use to create prosperity, it shows up in the form of ideas and passion and creativity. And final most important step, we have the freedom to use all those things. To use all those things. So we need to get it into our heart and into our mind that there's no such thing as a money problem. There's only an idea problem. There's no such thing as a money problem. There's only an idea problem. There's only a blockage of the flow of energy, and the only possible place that those ideas can be blocked is not out there, it's in here. It is always in here. Eric Butterworth said, I love these prosperity quotes, so you put them on a card, they're fabulous. Eric Butterworth, in his book Spiritual Economics, had one quote that is worth the price of the book. He said, you are never further than one idea away from all the wealth in the universe. You are never further than one idea away from all the wealth in the universe. So one single idea is all it takes. But that idea, whatever it happens to be, whether it's a business or an invention or whatever it is available right now. We don't have to look for it and find it. It's never being withheld from us because the universe never withholds anything from us ever. So if the idea that we need to create this infinite abundance, this infinite wealth, isn't showing up, it has to be because we are either pushing it away, which a lot of people do, or else we're looking out there for an answer, while this marvelous idea that we've been waiting for, we're looking out there and it's dancing around our feet going, I'm right here, I'm right here. It's kind of funny, you know, you're sitting there and we're just ignoring it, looking off in the ozone. If it wasn't so sad, it would be funny. I mean, we know, most of us here, whether or not we admit it, that we are all capable of coming up with some pretty interesting and impressive ideas. I know a couple artists in the audience here, and they create from ideas. They don't create, these people I know don't create from an image. They create from something they see within. We also know, or at least we should, that nothing can come between us and the source of those ideas except our own thoughts and beliefs and opinions. Which means the only person who can close off our access to prosperity, all right, is us. And we do this when we focus on ideas and beliefs and that are wrong, and we don't exercise our power to think. We also do it when we get so caught up in fear and limitation that we become mentally, emotionally, and spiritually paralyzed. That's when we get caught up in the ideas of scarcity and lack, as Bill talked about. And we can only free ourselves from that kind of limited thinking by consciously and deliberately choosing to practice those ideas. Do it in our spiritual work. And, shameless advertisement here, this is a good place to learn it. This is a good place to learn these ideas. You see, because we are all independent, individual expressions of life, because every one of us came from the very same source, not just in here, I'm talking about everybody everywhere, and because we're all connected at the level of spirit, and we're all capable of expressing life in whatever way we choose, what we call prosperity has to be about our ability to express the freedom to create and attract whatever things or opportunities or situations or people or whatever that we want to create. So it's not about accumulating stuff. It's about being free to enjoy our stuff without being controlled by it. That's what it's about. It's about being free to control the flow of abundance through our life, both coming in and going out. We have to have the flow in and out, in and out. I mean, if you think about it, if we're perfectly honest, money itself is worthless to us unless we're exchanging it for something. I mean, it's just paper or metal or blips on a screen. We can't eat it. We can't wear it. It can't take us anywhere, but it can allow us to buy delicious food, to go to the best restaurant in town. It can allow us to buy beautiful clothes. It can allow us to take a trip anywhere we want, anytime we want. But, and this is important, the fact that we do any or all of these things doesn't stop anyone else from doing the same or more. That's an important idea. And no one else's prosperity or lack of prosperity needs to have the slightest effect on our ability to express abundance either. You see, contrary to what the world tells us, there's plenty of everything to go around. All we hear about everywhere is we're running out of this, people don't have that. There is plenty to go around. There's no limit to how much the world can create or how much we can create in our own life. And this is true about every single person. So when Dr. Holmes talks about a universal substance that surrounds us and awaits our direction, some people have trouble with that idea, but this power surrounds us and it awaits our conscious direction. He's talking about both realized and unrealized substance. He's talking about things we can see and things we can't see yet that exist in the realm of pure possibility, pure potential. So that means there's always more we can draw upon, and no one can get in the way of our good, because it doesn't have to come through anyone else. It comes from the direct source of all good. So no one can steal our prosperity. No one can cheat us out of our prosperity if we have a consciousness of prosperity, because then we can just create more. Somebody asked Henry Ford at the peak of his wealth, "What would you do if you lost everything tomorrow?" And he smiled and he said, "I would find another need in society and figure out a way to fit that need better than anybody else." Very, very simple. And in a short time, he said, "I would be wealthy again." This is somebody who understood prosperity. Here's another story. You know I like history. After World War II, a few of us were alive in that rough period. In Berlin, the German government obviously was in total disarray, and it was under the control of the Allies, which was the Americans, the British, the French, and the Russians. So besides creating a functional government from the country that had just been destroyed by war, they also needed to create a brand new monetary system because the Reichsmark was valueless at that point. So some bureaucrat came up with a solution. They decided, true story, to give a certain amount of money to every person in every household, thinking that would create an economy where everyone was equal. Doesn't that sound nice? We'll give everybody the same amount of money, and everything's going to be just hunky-dory. Perfect. The interesting thing was, 2-3 years later, the same people who were rich before the war had the money. Big surprise. And the same people who were poor before the war were asking for more. They were asking me for more. Once again, money does not create wealth. Only a consciousness of prosperity can do that. Now, there's a book I'm sure many of you read called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Anybody read that here? A number of you. Robert Kiyosaki, I think, was the author. And I was looking through it the other day while I was getting ready for this talk, and I found it fascinating that responsible, wealthy parents do not teach their children how to make money or how to get money. Very interesting, they don't. They teach them how to provide value and how to recognize value when they see it. Very, very different. They teach them how money responds to ideas. They also teach them how to give, not out of a sense of guilt or obligation, but out of a belief in their own prosperity and the abundance of the universe. Now, they don't use these words. They use it based on who they are and what they do, but that's what they're saying. You see, people who are truly wealthy do not take money out of the system. They provide value into the system, all right? Not only just to the overall economy, they also end up adding value to their own bank account. And people who are truly wealthy, who experience some sort of a downturn where they lose everything, are immediately thinking, not doing, they're immediately thinking of ways to replace their fortune. And they usually do it fairly quickly. On the other hand, a person who loses a minimum wage job usually goes out and starts looking for what? Another minimum wage job, all right? And there's nothing wrong with that, but it is a reflection of how they see themselves in terms of the value of money. Simply is. In spiritual economics, Eric Butterworth says, a man who loses a $40,000 a year job goes out looking for another $40,000 a year job. Person making $100,000 goes out looking for a $100,000 a year job. It's very, very interesting. So real prosperity isn't about how much money we have, because there are a lot of people who have money who are not prosperous because they're afraid of losing it. They're always trying to protect it from their competitors, from the IRS, from their ex-wife, whatever it happens to be. They are working themselves to death trying to make more because they'll never have enough. They will never have enough to let them feel prosperous. All right. No matter how much money they have, people who are immersed in a prosperity, in a non-prosperous consciousness is going to create more lack because their fear is stifling their freedom to live. One of my favorite spiritual teachers was a man by the name of Oscar Wilde. I like him. He once pointed out that the only people who think about money more than the rich are people who don't have it. Very, very interesting. But I think he's wrong. I think he's wrong. Because people who don't have money, most people, don't think about prosperity. They think about lack. They think about it constantly. They resent people who have money, and they talk about that. You see a lot of that in this political discussion on a bunch of different fronts. They constantly focus on things they don't have, all the stuff that Bill read in that great reading, okay? When they open their wallet, they complain about how little they have, and they don't expect it to get any better. That is not a workable path to prosperity. It is not. We need to think when we're paying our bills, doing all these things, when you sit down to pay your bills, and I'm telling you, don't pay them just randomly when they come in. Let a few of them get together, sit down in a place, and consciously pay those bills and think about what's in your mind as you're going through it. For over 20 years, I've said this before, but right after my name on the top of the check, I put the initials TYG, exclamation point. Thank you, God. No matter what I'm paying for, American Express bill, air conditioning, I love air conditioning, heat, whatever it happens to be, all right? If in our consciousness, when we are paying our bills or balancing our checkbook, which is another element of prosperity, are we grateful for what's there? Because I'll tell you what, if you're not grateful for what you got, the universe isn't going to give you more to be ungrateful for. That's just the truth, all right? What we have to realize is the thoughts that we are thinking while we are buying, while we are spending, while we are paying, are choices we are constantly making about our own prosperity. That's what those thoughts are. Those are the kinds of habitual, non-productive thoughts, the negative ones, that keep us from growing, not only in our net worth, but by knowing our own value to the universe. I mean, whether we realize it or not, we have been divinely designed to be happy, to be healthy, but also to be prosperous. We have been divinely designed, our nature, to express freedom and abundance. So in terms of prosperity, think about it. We've been given the desire to have it. True. We've all been given that. We've been given the intelligence to create it. We've got that whether we know it or not. We have been given a material world to practice it in. That's a great gift. And we've been given the ability to enjoy it. Every single one of us has all four of those things, and they don't cost a cent. They don't cost a cent. All right? Money is simply a tool that we had to invent to help us get from thought to thing. We talk about we create things out of thoughts. Thoughts become things. That we use that statement all sorts of different ways. I mean, the only reason God does not need money, besides the fact that God doesn't have pockets, that's another reason. The only reason that God doesn't need money is that God knows it's possible to go directly from thought to demonstration. Directly from thought to demonstration without all this other petty stuff in between. But what's really exciting is we can do the same thing because we are told we are made in the image and likeness. Not of the appearance of God, but of the consciousness of God. The prosperity consciousness, the health consciousness, the love consciousness of Spirit. And the closer we come to accepting and understanding that it is our consciousness that attracts the things we desire, not our express book or American Express card, the sooner we're going to be able to recognize and use this power to become completely immersed in this ocean of abundance that we were born into. And I don't know about you, but that's the kind of water I like to swim in, personally. So, anyway, take these ideas as your own because they are the truth in your life. And they are the truth in mine, and so it is. And so it is. Thank you. All right. Thank you. All right, let's take a moment. Breathe the abundance of air in this room, plenty for everyone. Recognizing that this world is an amazing place. An abundance of mountains, of land, of water, of trees, grass, sand on the beach. Abundance everywhere we look. And the only way we can be separated from that abundance is if we see ourselves as separate from it. So in this moment, today, this morning, I shift my consciousness as you shift yours. We begin to recognize that we are able, simply by a matter of shifting our consciousness, to have opportunities for prosperity showing up in extravagant, opulent, amazing ways. There is nothing we need to get. There is nothing we need to take. There is only something new that we need to believe. So as I listen to the news about lack and limitation and people fighting over scraps, no matter how big those scraps are, I recognize that there is enough for everyone. And as I allow myself to create those things I desire, I make it more possible for the world to provide those things for others. But all of us have to be open. Even though the abundance is poured over us in great quantities, if we are not open, there's no place for it to get in. So I open my heart, I open my mind, I open my wallet, I open my bank account, I open my consciousness, allowing prosperity to flow not just in, but also out, to allow myself to express prosperity, to allow me to give freely to those who have not yet found these ideas, to allow myself to shift love from within me to expand it without measure into the world. All of this is the way I create abundance. All of this is where I create a consciousness of total ease, never worrying about money, never worrying about bills, never worrying about a meal, never worrying about anything, knowing that these things have already been given, and I need only accept them. And I don't accept them from the government or from another person. I accept them from God, because that is my spiritual birthright. Knowing this, I give thanks for all that I have been given and all that I have yet to give. I give thanks for the opportunity to live in a physical world that is truly spiritual at its core, and the ability to create the things I love out of nothing but thought. Knowing this, is the truth. I release this idea into consciousness, letting it be completely so for me and every person from this moment on. Join me in saying, and so it is.